The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Folks, we're unique in all of history. We really are. But those names that's on that wall and every other wall and tombstone in America of veterans is the reason why we're able to stand here. We can't kid ourselves about that. And so I hope that the nation comes together. We're not Democrats or Republicans today. We're Americans. We're Americans who've given their lives. Time we remind everybody who we are. We have been tested, and we still will surely test it further. But I know that we as a people are up to the task. Each generation of Americans receives a precious gift of liberty, and we work to share it with more people, to make our country more open, more free, more fair.
It's a great message. We are one country. You know, coming out of Memorial Day weekend, I know a lot of people will try to take what one politician says and make something big out of it, or take what somebody on the other side says and attack them for that, or claim that one party has exclusive rights to patriotism or the other is the only protector of the Constitution. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just the thing is, we live in very divided times. We live in very political times. You watch this show, you know that. But it was good to see President Biden on Memorial Day talking about those who sacrificed, but also about what this country has been through, the difficult times this country's been through, and the fact that we are one nation. And if you really, if you don't live inside of the political bubble day in and day out, you actually do see that when you go out there. Men and women actually, boys and girls, you know, actually getting along day in and day out in their lives, working together as a country. And yes, it's very charged around politics right now. It has been for 20, 25 years. But we are one country. And, you know, you look at the men and women that have given their all for this country to give us the freedom, the right to be able to say what we want to say, whether it's on this show or around your home or in your offices if you're working today. I mean, my gosh, that's what this country's all about, and it's what their sacrifice is all about. And we, as one people, we honor them and we thank them.
And I think his message was wise in many ways, because he also very gently said it's going to take a while to kind of restabilize and really get back to who we are, because it's time to remember who we are as a country. And he did that with us on this Memorial Day.
Can I just say, we are as a country, you look at so many. Well, just look at the way that we really have approached the development of this vaccine. Republicans and Democrats, scientists of neither party, of all parties, work together. The United States is doing better right now as far as getting the vaccine out and opening this country up than most of our allies or the people that we looked at a year ago going, why are they doing so much better than us? We've really seen a lot of American exceptionalism this year. Again, it's outside the realm of politics where you see that. And we just, right now, it's a Washington problem, and let's hope that our leaders can figure out how to move forward and catch up with the rest of the country.
Also working on Memorial Day, we have White House reporter for the Associated Press, Jonathan Lemire, professor at Princeton University, Eddie Glaude Jr., and U.S. National Editor at the Financial Times. Ed Luce is with us this morning, and this Memorial Day weekend looked a lot more like how things were pre-pandemic. Remember that? We saw it Saturday marked the end of the COVID-19 restrictions in Massachusetts. And despite the rain, fans filled Fenway Park to watch the Red Sox beat the Marlins. I mean, there were some empty seats, but it was pretty full. In Indiana, 135,000
fans. This was amazing, wasn't it?
Look at this.
130,000 at the Indy 500.
Came out for the Indy 500 at the highest attended sporting event since the beginning of the pandemic, with vaccinations offered on-site. Getting really smart with these vaccines, offering money, making it really easy to get the vax. At the movies, the sequel thriller A Quiet Place 2 is set to gross $58.5 million by the end of the holiday weekend, and a pandemic best for the film industry, by the way.
I missed the first Quiet Place.
I missed all movies.
Was it good? Alex, you went this weekend, right? You went to the movies this weekend.
I did. I went to Cruella.
And give us your review of Cruella.
Cruella was kind of it was dark. It was like a cross between a Devil Wears Prada and the Joker. So really good Disney kid movie, right?
I'm sure your little kids love that.
Oh, they loved it. Yeah, it was 2.5 hours. You know, perfect for kids, but it was actually quite good. Emma Stone, Emma Thompson were remarkable, so it's good. I'm not sure for kids, but it was really good.
I mean, Emma Stone, Emma Thompson, those two in just about any movie is great. Incredible soundtrack, very dark, long, yes. Sounds great for your 5 or 6 year old kid.
Not really, actually. That's like me bringing my girls to the Book of Mormon.
Yeah.
Okay, the TSA
when they were
screened nearly 2 million travelers heading into the long weekend, the highest number of passengers screened during the pandemic. So a lot of people on the move.
Ed Luce, it looks like things are starting to open back up. Looks, this Memorial Day weekend, really, it was that opening that we were hearing about last Easter and then last Memorial Day and then last 4th of July and then last Thanksgiving. It's finally upon us.
It is. I mean, we should never forget the speed with which this vaccine rollout has happened, the speed and the scale. You mentioned the speed with which the vaccines were developed, but the second most important thing is how quickly you get them into people's arms. And we have. I mean, I don't think there's been anything like this on this scale in American public health history. We're now beginning to see the fruits of that. So it's a very different Memorial Day to the one we had last year, where, if you remember, Trump was saying everything should open up again and all kinds of wacko theories. This is for real this time and for the right reasons.
Yeah. Absolutely. New numbers from a Harvard-Harris poll show President Biden's approval rating sits at 62%. That is the highest mark for his administration so far. His disapproval rating also reached a new low of 38%. The same poll also shows 47% of Americans believe the country is on the right track. Back in January, just 27% said the country was headed in the right direction. So Joe Biden banking some good numbers here in his presidency.
There's just such dissonance here. We sit here and maybe...
Well, you look what's going on in Texas overnight.
Well, maybe we're majoring on the minor here, or maybe these, you know, you look at these and go, well, are these polls wrong? Like, you know, the Wisconsin poll and some of the other polls, state polls that were wrong. But Jonathan Lemire, I mean, the national polls weren't like 20 points off. I mean, if you look at it, the national polls weren't that far off. It's usually the state polls that are outliers. And I'm just looking at, you know, 62-38. We've seen quite a few up in the 60s. There's some, of course, in the 50s. There's a varying degree, but every one of them's over 50%. And this right track, wrong track number from this Harvard-Harris poll has jumped nearly 20 points. I'm a skeptic. You know, I beat the crowd early and tweeted. I probably back in early October of last year, I don't believe any polls, and I didn't believe any of those polls that were saying Biden was so far ahead. But in this case, something's happening out there that seems to be quite different than what the House GOP caucus is thinking or doing.
Yeah, Joe, certainly we have, you and I have had our share of poll skepticism, and I think you're right to focus on the right track, wrong track numbers. And these are big picture things, and we haven't seen the nation feel this good about itself in a long time. And I think, and that of course reflects what we're also seeing is very good numbers for President Biden. In a range somewhere between the low 50s and now this one, 62, which is a pretty remarkable number, and all of these much higher than his predecessor ever obtained in any poll during his time. And I think the big picture stuff, as we know, is there's a sense of optimism. The vaccine rollout has been so successful. And, you know, we have seen Americans now, more than 50% of adult Americans have been fully vaccinated, and the White House is on track to reach its goal of 70% of adult Americans having at least one shot by our next patriotic holiday, July 4th. The economy is showing signs of reopening. It's up fits and starts, and there's still questions as to what further federal intervention the economy needs, to be sure. But those are the big things, a sense of normalcy, a sense the country is starting to look like it was again pre-pandemic, and not just in terms of the virus, but also, of course, in terms of some of the leadership from the White House. And that's something that West Wing aides have been really zeroed in on during the campaign and now certainly during the first few months of the Biden administration, that America was just sort of tired at the end of the Trump administration. It was looking to think less about the president, to have a more of a sense of regular order, if you will, coming from the White House. And an event like yesterday, I think, underscores that. I'm in Wilmington, Delaware today and have been all weekend on pool duty with the president. I was there yesterday for his Memorial Day weekend remarks. And to hear him speak so movingly about the sacrifices of American servicemen and their families, to stand there in the rain for more than an hour, listening to other tributes, to make it so deeply personal as he reflected upon the loss of his son, Beau Biden, who was a veteran who died 6 years ago yesterday. So it was a tough, difficult day, that anniversary for the Biden family. And he connected it to the larger sacrifices of the American servicemen and saying the people, as they reflect the best of a nation that's on its way back. And to hear that message from the White House is one that I think also is resonating with Americans. We're seeing it in those polls.
And Joe, just to frame something Jonathan Lemire said, getting Americans to think less about the presidency, the fire hose of news coming toward Americans during the Trump presidency was just tons of gripping negativity and fighting and sort of a very different attitude coming from the White House. Maybe Americans get a break. They think less about the presidency, not a bad thing. But when they do tune in and see what he's doing something like this, which is a big difference for everybody in America.
And you know what people can do when they tune in and they see a president doing what a president is supposed to be
honoring
doing.
Honoring people.
Honoring people, not talking about himself, not making controversial statements. You know what they can do? They can sit there, they can look at it and smile, and then they can turn over to the ball game. It's the return to normalcy.
Doing his job.
You know, we just don't know how much to trust these polls, Eddie. But I remember talking to so many of people who were supporting Donald and saying, he just exhausts me.
Yeah.
He just every day, I don't want to talk about it at dinner. I don't want to talk about it at breakfast. I don't want to talk about it when I'm golfing the whole 18 rounds. I don't want to talk about it when I'm fishing. I don't want to talk about it when I'm hunting. I don't want to talk about it. I'm voting for him. I don't want to talk about it all the time. Right. And I was hearing that from people that voted for Donald Trump twice. Well, what in the world has happened since the election? The madness has gotten even more intense. And, you know, in certain circles, people are talking about it more. And there is just a sheer exhaustion. It's, you know, I'm the wrong person to deliver this message since we're hosts of a 3-hour show, Mika and I, about politics. But I mean, it's not good for this country to be talking about politics 24 hours. Say, that's not who we are.
Or fighting about politics.
Or even talking about politics, obsessing about politics. People looking at MSNBC or Fox 24 hours a day or CNN 24 hours a day. I feel like, you know, then to Ferris Bueller, what are you still doing here? Go out, like, do something, get out, you know. And Donald Trump had people talking about Donald Trump, including us, 24 hours a day. I think this return to normalcy, it cannot be overstated. And you look at these high numbers and the right track. I just wonder, Eddie, if that's one of the things that are pushing these numbers up.
I think, Joe, I think you're right in this sense, right? That we cannot underestimate the importance of competence and, in some ways, the displacement of spectacle. Under the Trump administration, every single day, as you rightly describe, we were dealing with the circus and P.T. Barnum. And our politics felt that way, right? And there's this sense in which the seams of the country were coming undone. And there was this intensity. And then you combine that with the reality of COVID-19, its devastation. So, and of course, incompetence was on display every single day. So we cannot downplay the comfort that some of us feel in the country, that government is actually working, or at least trying to work, that competence is actually at the helm. But at the same time, I want us to be mindful, even as we kind of make this shift, that Memorial Day is a day in which we acknowledge those who sacrificed their lives. We're acknowledging our dead, those who have made this moment of comfort possible. And that this Memorial Day is also part of a kind of broader recognition that millions of Americans are dealing with anniversaries of their dead, people who have lost their lives because of COVID. And then you combine that with the statistic, Joe, I think a recent poll said that 56% of Republicans believe that the election was rigged and 53% believe that Donald Trump is still president or something like that. We know that there are deep divisions. Yeah. We have to assert unity, but we also need to understand that the country stands in some ways on a knife's edge, and that this particular feeling, we need to kind of figure out how to sustain it over time in light of the contradictions that define our current day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, and I will say when that 53% becomes 47%, 46%, and it's moving in that direction, then I think we can breathe a little bit easier. It is important to remember if it's 53% of Republicans who believe that, that's like 25-30% of the overall population. And so I'm not saying that's great. I'm just saying we may be moving in a good direction. I'll just say, Mika, you just look at what we talk about. Look what Washington's in a heated debate about right now. And instead of having a president calling for the imminent arrest of his political opponent 2 weeks before the election and pressuring his attorney general to put him into jail, or to call a news host of a TV show a murderer 12 times and to try to get him sent to jail, or to be saying that, you know, you trust Vladimir Putin more than you trust your own intel community, that the heads of which you saw. I mean, instead of that, we're talking right now about, we're complaining about deficits, about debt. People are coming on talking about inflationary pressures that are being from big spending, that we may like have inflation coming up even more. You know, we're talking about those sort of things. And again, there is that return to normalcy. Now, there are Republicans that are still trying to talk about, as Eddie said, how the seams of this republic are being ripped apart.
Yeah,
most Americans just aren't buying that. And right now, at least, they're in a bubble talking to themselves.
Yeah, and I appreciate what you're trying to sort of figure out what this moment feels like, and this relief almost from the tension of the past 4 years. And to Eddie's point, I think people are taking comfort in what appears to be a normally functioning administration, even if they didn't vote for Joe Biden. And I think he is achieving his goal to try and be a president to all people, even those who didn't vote for him. There are over 600,000 people who died of COVID. There is PTSD from the past year during this pandemic, mentally and financially, and a lot of issues gripping this nation. But those numbers, as you say, Joe, show that people are feeling like someone at least or something better is in control of the situation.
Well, and again, there are Republicans who oppose almost all of his policies, the great majority of his policies, and we recognize that. And there you can turn, and if you want to hear that the sky is falling and the world's coming to an end, there are a lot of cable channels you can turn to that weren't saying that a couple months ago, and a lot of podcasts you can listen to, a lot of a lot of websites you can go to that will reconfirm those pre-existing biases. They're out there. Of course, Facebook pages that are out there. I'm just saying overall, generally, the guy sitting somewhere between mid-50s and low-60s, that message is not penetrating the vast majority of American people right now. It's just sort of over in a bubble.
Well, today, President Biden will partake in the annual Memorial Day wreath-laying ceremony at Arlington National Cemetery. And that's where we find NBC News national security and military correspondent Courtney Kuby. Courtney, what can we expect today?
So we will hear from President Joe Biden. This is more than 150 years, the tradition of having this ceremony at Arlington National Cemetery. In addition to President Joe Biden, we'll also hear today from the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs, General Mark Milley, and from Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin. They'll both make very brief remarks. We'll also see the annual wreath laying at the Tomb of Unknown Soldiers and hear taps play. As I mentioned, this is a ceremony that goes back to just after the Civil War, more than 150 years ago, when the United States began recognizing this day. A lot of people don't realize, but back then it was actually called Decoration Day. The idea was that people, men and women, would go to the graves of then the men who had been killed in the Civil War and decorate their graves. Over the years, though, decades and decades passed, and the U.S. was involved in more and more conflicts. More and more men, and then eventually men and women, began to be killed in those conflicts. And in the late 1960s, the U.S. renamed it Memorial Day and made it the last Monday in May. So we will see that ceremony today. It'll have a very different feel than the ceremony just last year. We stood in this exact same location, actually, last year on Memorial Day when then President Trump spoke at the ceremony. But this year, for the first time in more than a year, Arlington Cemetery is now open to the public. Men and women can come. They can pay honor to the men and women who have been killed, who lay rest here. More than 400,000 men and women who are laid to rest here, Mika and Joe. And today we will hear from President Joe Biden in what every year is a very solemn and somber ceremony.
NBC's Courtney Kuby, thank you very much for that report. And still ahead on Morning Joe, in the absence of new clues about the origins of coronavirus, a lab leak theory is getting more and more interest. We'll have the very latest from Beijing. Plus, in Texas, a controversial voting bill gets blocked after Democratic lawmakers stage a walkout. Former Texas Congressman Beto O'Rourke will be our guest to weigh in on that. You're watching Morning Joe. We'll be right back.
Today and every day, Planned Parenthood is committed to ensuring that everyone has the information and resources they need to make their own decisions about their bodies, including abortion care. Lawmakers who oppose abortion are attacking Planned Parenthood, which means affordable, high-quality, basic health care for more than 2 million people is at stake. The right to control our bodies and get the health care we need has been stolen from us. And now, politicians in nearly every state have introduced bills that would block people from getting the sexual and reproductive care they need. Planned Parenthood believes everyone deserves health care. It's a human right. That's why they fight every day to push for common sense policies that protect our right to control our own bodies and against policies that interfere with decisions between patients and their doctor. Planned Parenthood needs your support now more than ever. With supporters like you, we can reclaim our rights and protect and expand access to abortion care. Visit PlannedParenthood.org/future. That's PlannedParenthood.org/future.
It might take more than 90 days, but look, if this thing came out of a lab, there are people in China who probably know that. Even the Wuhan Institute of Virology head at first said her first thought was this a leak from my lab? So those people have been systematically silenced by their government. Now that the world knows that how important this is to the United States, when we lead, the world follows, that might also provide moral courage to many of these ethical scientists in China, for whom I think this is weighing on their consciences. I think that we're going to see more information come out as a result of this inquiry.
That was former Deputy National Security Advisor to Donald Trump, Matthew Pottinger, on the investigation into the origin of the coronavirus.
And we can't underline it enough because, of course, We have all the documentation of Trump officials, administration officials that came up short, that failed, that were asleep at the switch when all of this was going on, that didn't. Matthew Pottinger, not one of those. He called it right time and again. He warned everybody inside the administration early on about what was coming. That guy. If you haven't read up on him, you need to read up on him. That's how a government official is supposed to respond in a time of crisis. Like, this guy should have a movie written about him running around begging people to pay attention, not just to what was coming to America, but what was happening in China at the time. So when he says that, he's standing on very, very firm ground.
So former FDA Commissioner Scott Gottlieb says the theory it leaked from a lab, the virus, is growing more likely. Joining us from Beijing, NBC News foreign correspondent Janice Mackey-Frayer. Janice, is there any indication that China will cooperate with all of this, the latest investigation?
Well, there isn't any indication, and there probably isn't any hope of that happening either. From China's perspective, they did their part with the WHO joint study that released that report suggesting that the lab leak was extremely unlikely. Because from China's view, not only did the virus not originate in a lab in Wuhan, they don't believe that it started in China at all. And so if there is going to be mounting pressure on China to have investigators on the ground, U.S. scientists come to look at the records, look at the databases, look at any safety audits, we can expect that there would be a discussion around reciprocation. Because remember, at the same time that the lab leak theory has been refloated, China has been fighting back with what is could be called the Fort Detrick theory, this belief that the World Health Organization needs to start looking elsewhere at other labs, at other facilities in other countries, in particular in the U.S. So the thing is that nothing has really changed in that position from China's perspective, except that now this lab leak theory has what we can call a mainstream variant. With the U.S. intelligence community now having 90 days to try to come up with something. But that, too, is going to be a challenge. The intelligence gathering capabilities on the ground here in China are not what they used to be. And so President Biden is likely going to be relying on international partners to try to come up with something that might help steer things in a better direction.
And Janice, do you have any reporting on this new variant that we're hearing about in Vietnam?
It's a troubling new variant. I mean, they all are. But this one, health officials are saying, is very dangerous because they believe that it spreads very quickly by air. There have been no cases reported yet in the U.S. However, Vietnam, which is a country that until this point had avoided large outbreaks, is now in lockdown. People are being told to stay inside, that this is highly transmittable, and they see it as almost a hybrid between the India variant and the UK variant. And so they're sending out an alert. They're saying that they'll have the coding sequence of this particular strain available sometime soon. But again, it adds to the urgency as we see these new variants driving a surge in infections, in particular across Asia. With this urgency, there again is more fuel in this debate about what has caused COVID-19 to begin with. It all goes back to the origins of the coronavirus, and ultimately that will come back here. But again, it's unlikely to be a very receptive or productive discussion with Chinese officials.
All right. Thank you so much, Janice. That's NBC's Janice Mackey-Frayer in Beijing. We thank you so much. Jonathan Lemire, how important is it right now to the Biden administration to get to the bottom of this? How much pressure are they going to be putting on our own intel community and also on China to get some access and figure out what exactly happened here?
It's becoming far more of a priority, Joe. This was on the back burner for a while as the administration is more focused on managing the pandemic here. But as the White House put out last week when they announced this review, they feel like it's important to know how this pandemic started so they can be better prepared to prepare for the next one, whenever that might be. And let's hope it's not anytime soon. The Biden administration, the White President, has ordered the intelligence agencies 90 days to do this review. There have been reports of some new intelligence, some new information that has come to light to U.S. officials that spurred this review. It's not quite clear what that is. That has not been publicly disclosed. We pressed Jen Psaki, the White House press secretary, on the Air Force One at the end of last week, and she was not willing to answer that question. But I think it also is, in addition to the short term, this moment when they're going to push China, it starts what is going to be the most complicated relationship of the Biden administration in terms of an overseas partner or adversary at times, and that's China. This is the most important relationship that this president is going to face. Rightly, a lot of attention on the Putin summit coming up in a few weeks. But this is a White House that's still putting together its strategy on China, trying to figure out what to do on tariffs, how much international pressure they want to place, what should the president's message be on human rights in places like Hong Kong and Taiwan and so on. And we hear from him knowing this is going to be the economic rivalry of this next century, and that his message is that we have to take care of matters at home to compete abroad. But this is the backdrop to the first step in this relationship that is going to be at times very tense. And this administration is going to put a lot of energy into managing.
All right, Jonathan Lemire, we know you have to go. Thanks so much for being with us. Go Sox.
Oh, boy.
A good weekend. We won't get into why. Just a good weekend. Thank you so much for being with us.
To the middle.
Hold on a second. I want to ask Ed really quickly before we go to the next story. Ed, you know, there was during the first 6 months of this pandemic, obviously it started in China, but then there seemed to be a spin from China. Hey, we're getting help out there. We're going to help other countries. The United States is mired down in its own internal disputes. And I actually started seeing articles in The New York Times and other publications saying that this was actually going to be a huge public relations win for China. And that was, I don't know if the Chinese were getting that out. I don't know. But they were trying to spin this as a victory for China, that they were able to manage it much better, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So there was always going to be this propaganda battle about what happened. I, of course, gasped. I almost passed out when I read that. How could this be a win for China? But that's what the spin was 6 months in. Talk about how important it is for the Chinese to obfuscate the facts here, to stop people from finding out that this escaped from a lab, if in fact it did escape from a lab?
It's a really good question, because, if China changed its feathers and just announced, look, okay, we've not been transparent, we're all unclear as to the origins of this virus, let's open up Wuhan again, the virology lab, the wet markets, the doctors and lab technicians who didn't get properly questioned by the WHO, let's really try and get to the bottom of this. That would actually be a major public relations win for China. But I think there's pretty much zero chance. Hell will freeze over before China agrees to do that. In which case, we're going to get, as Matt Pottinger was talking about on that show, I mean, Matt Pottinger, as you rightly emphasize, reported on earlier SARS outbreaks in China and East Asia. He's got some form on this issue. He's got some history and knows the details of how China covered up previous SARS origins, which they did. That if China doesn't cooperate with the WHO, this is going to increasingly look like China's Chernobyl, which is a disastrous public relations blow for them. So I think, it's very hard to extract any geopolitical victories from 2020. The change of administration in America certainly helped America's reputation, as does the vaccine rollout and development. But you can see a major geopolitical blow coming out of 2020, and that would be China. The word Chernobyl is, of course, associated with the beginning of the end of the Soviet Union. It was a devastating blow in the eyes of the Soviet people. I don't think the Chinese people are going to be trusting what the Chinese government says about this.
Let me ask you this, Ed, because it's been fascinating to see what's been happening in China over the past few years. President Xi has been consolidating power. Many say he's consolidated power there more than anybody else since Chairman Mao. Donald Trump, of course, congratulated him on that for some reason. But I think sometimes we don't understand that China's government isn't a dictatorship. There are so many complicated cross currents going back and forth. And there has been a rising concern about President Xi's actions over the past year or so among many quarters in and out of the government, inside the party. I'm curious, what's at stake for him inside the Communist Party as this possible scandal unfurls? And could this be a real challenge to his leadership if this keeps developing into, as you say, a Chinese Chernobyl?
Well, he has, as you rightly say, he's elevated himself up there with Chairman Mao and with Deng Xiaoping, two of the great leaders of the Long March and of the Chinese Revolution. Of course, he wasn't around when the Chinese Revolution happened. He's immortalized his thoughts, Xi Jinping thoughts, in the Chinese Communist Party constitution. He's also given himself pretty much every title and the head of every military commission going. He's got more titles than any other Chinese leader. Deng Xiaoping was vice chairman of the Chinese Bridge Playing Association in the last few years of his life. He didn't have to display his power because he had it. So Xi Jinping is showing some fragility here by putting every medal he can find on his chest. And he's clearly made a lot of enemies within the Chinese system. Corruption investigations are never quite what they seem. They're usually ways of getting rid of rivals rather than corruption. And he's been conducting a lot of those. So I think what we see here is a much more brittle Chinese leader than might at first seem to be the case. And so Chinese politics is going to be very interesting going forward. We should be watching it closely.
So we'll move now to the Middle East. Another story we're watching closely, where Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu could be replaced after leading the country for 12 years. Leader of the Yamida Party, former aide to Prime Minister Naftali Bennett, announced he would work with opposition leaders to build an alternative government to force Netanyahu to leave office. For more on this, let's bring in NBC News foreign correspondent Matt Bradley. Matt, what is the latest?
Well, Mika, I mean, the big headline here is that after four elections in 2 years, the Israeli opposition to Benjamin Netanyahu has finally, apparently, gotten their act together. And they're posing a very real challenge to Benjamin Netanyahu, Israel's longest serving prime minister. He's been in office for the past 12 years. And so that's why we heard from Benjamin Netanyahu last night as this plan was coming together. And guys, you know, the negotiations for this new coalition, they're going furiously right now. They ran into the early hours of the morning. They're still going on today. They have until Wednesday to form this coalition government. And so Benjamin Netanyahu, big friend of President Trump, he had a television news conference, kind of like a news conference, kind of like a temper tantrum last night. He called this new coalition plan an opportunistic government, a government of capitulation, a government of fraud, a government of inertia. And he even compared the new coalition to Bashar al-Assad's regime in Syria and the mullahs who run Iran. So why is it that Benjamin Netanyahu is so sensitive about this? Of course, it's not just that he doesn't want to leave power after all these years as the prime minister. It's also because he's really quite literally fighting for his political life, or rather his political freedom. He faces three charges of corruption in three separate cases: bribery, breach of trust, and fraud. If he is removed from the premiership, and he was indicted on these last year, he could open himself up to quite a lot of legal jeopardy. He could, as Israel's longest serving prime minister, also go to jail, which would be rather shocking. Now, all of this is going on amidst, of course, the conflict in Gaza, that 11-day conflict that just wrapped up. Now, negotiations for a more permanent ceasefire are ongoing right now. Egypt is leading that, and that is, you know, running in the background alongside the rise of Joe Biden in the United States. Now, I mentioned before, Benjamin Netanyahu is a close friend of President Trump. And Joe Biden, you know, he showed that the United States isn't necessarily going to be sticking in Israel's camp. There was some small but very perceptible shifts towards the left from the Biden administration, especially with compared to other previous U.S. presidents. So when you look at the situation in Israel, it looks almost, if you squint, as though there's going to be a real changing of the guard on the Israeli-Palestinian right. conflict if the U.S. changes and the Israeli government changes. But, you know, if this is the beginning of the end for Benjamin Netanyahu, it's certainly not the beginning of the end for the Israeli right wing. This is a new coalition government that will be cobbled together. It will be a very flimsy, very fragile thing, and it could easily break up at any time. Guys?
All right, NBC's Matt Bradley, thank you so much. We appreciate it. Ed Luce, I have been to this show before several times. And at the end, the political Houdini somehow always slips the chains and swims up to the surface and lives to perform in another show.
He does. I mean, he's not just Netanyahu's not just the Houdini of Israel. He's really the Houdini of the Western democratic world. There's nobody who really begins to compare. Even Italy's Berlusconi wouldn't match Bibi Netanyahu's ability to wriggle out of trouble spots. He is, I think, the pioneer of Western populist, the successful Western populist electoral model. Parties all over the West have gone to Netanyahu and made alliances with him, learnt his methods from him, and forged pacts with him. Parties that formerly, you know, were anti-Israel and in some cases anti-Semitic, like Marine Le Pen's far-right party in France, like Viktor Orban in Hungary, they learned from Netanyahu how to demonize George Soros, a very anti-Semitic trope that, you know, that Netanyahu himself used about do-gooding, interfering globalists. So he's without any real inner moral limit as to what he's prepared to do to keep power. And this latest crisis with the Gaza Strip was part of that. It led to initially the collapse of coalition talks to form a government without him, which of course would then lead to his prosecution since he's no longer prime minister for the various crimes of fraud and corruption he's been indicted with. And it looks like maybe even that has failed now, that finally we're going to get a reckoning for Netanyahu. But I would never count him out. He is not just highly skilled, but he's without moral limit.
Oof. Ed Luce, thank you very much. We'll be following this. And coming up, Tulsa, Oklahoma is marking 100 years since a deadly race massacre that destroyed a predominantly black community. MSNBC correspondent Tremaine Lee joins us live from Tulsa ahead on Morning Joe.
Hey, everyone. It's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for less. And for a limited time, new customers receive their second month free when they sign up and use promo code MONTHFREE by May 31st. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Taxes, fees, and other third-party charges will apply. See website for additional details.
I don't choose to be uncomfortable. Reality has made me uncomfortable.
Houses destroyed, businesses destroyed. You know, yeah, we resilient, we rebuild. You know, it makes it seem like it was easy for me to move my business within a month, but, and I feel like I was destroyed. You know, so I can just imagine
how do you feel? A country may forget this history, but I cannot. I am 107-year-old and have never seen justice. I pray that one day I will.
We aren't just black and white pictures on a screen. I was there when it happened. I'm still here.
I am asking you today to give us some peace. Please give me, my family, and my community some justice.
That was a clip from the new documentary, Blood on Black Wall Street, The Legacy of the Tulsa Race Massacre, examining the traumatic impact of the 1921 tragedy. Today marks 100 years since white mobs terrorized the predominantly black town of Greenwood, killing an estimated 300 people and burning down the thriving business community known as the Black Wall Street. The riot began after armed members of the black community attempted to prevent the lynching of a young man accused of assaulting a white woman. President Biden is expected to visit the city tomorrow. We're going to get to Trymaine Lee live in Tulsa in just a moment. But first, Eddie Glaude, why is it important to remember this today and also to put it into context as we address the struggles today?
Well, Mika, I think it's important because we're trying to imagine who we are, who we aspire to be. It seems to me to connect with how Joe opened the show. If we're going to assert that Americans are one, we're one nation, we're going to have to confront this ugliness. We're going to have to confront the incompleteness, the injustice of our failure to respond to it. 107-year-old woman has never received justice. They wiped out generations of wealth in 48 hours. So it seems to me that this is not a matter of wallowing in guilt. It's not a matter of self-flagellation. It's a matter of confronting the truth so that we might release ourselves as a country into a new way of being together. So to go back to what Joe said at the beginning of the show, if we are one America, we have to tell the truth about what we've done in order to release ourselves into the future of actually being a unified country.
Let's go to Trymaine Lee, live in Tulsa right now. His documentary aired on MSNBC last night. Trymaine, how will the city be remembering this today?
Good morning, Mika. For the last few days, this community has been coming together in fellowship because the ache of what happened 100 years ago, which began 100 years ago today, is still being felt in the hearts of those in this community because they dealt with the violence of that day, but then the violence of the economic dispossession that followed, the violence of urban renewal, and now the violence of gentrification. And so 100 years later, this community is most desperately looking to be made whole, not just for the financial aspect, but also there's a sense of trauma that has been inherited where wealth was denied. And so this community has come together on this commemoration to remember what happened, but also try to center their narrative, right, and make sure that they're pushing the ball forward and hopefully, finally, that they may be made whole. There are people in this community who are calling for reparations, and those calls are most certainly getting louder, even though, you know, it's certainly politically divisive in this community still. Mm-hmm. But this community is coming together to remember what happened.
Eddie Glaude, jump in.
Trymaine, it's great to see you this morning. Let me ask you this question about the 100th anniversary of Tulsa and our contemporary moment. No one was really held to account for 300 dead, over 300 dead, 10,000 people displaced, homeless. What do you make of the relationship between not holding white rage accountable 100 years ago and not holding white rage accountable in January 6th? Kind of connect these two moments, this anniversary and the current political reality.
Well, certainly the psychic pangs of that kind of dynamic that you're talking about are still being felt, where people had to live in proximity with those who tried to murder them and stole their wealth. And you think about January 6th, this kind of sanctioned violence. And we think about what happened on May 31st and June 1st of 1921. The white community was deputized by law enforcement. They literally dropped bombs from the sky. And again, no one being held to account. That sent a loud and clear message that the state was not only not there to protect black bodies, but was there to weaponize whiteness, to weaponize the racism. And so when you think about that violence of January 6th and how that mob was allowed to push its way into the citadel of democracy, and you think about the way the mobs here in 1921 pushed into the black community, the citadel of black prosperity, 35 blocks, 12 miles of Greenwood Avenue with hundreds of black-owned businesses, theaters and beauty salons and barbershops all up in flames in an instant, right? And so I think there is a clear connect, and I think that's not lost on any of the folks here in this community, Eddie.
Tremaine Lee, thank you very, very much for being on this morning. And still ahead, former Texas Congressman Beto O'Rourke joins us. He will be talking about Democrats in his home state staging a walkout to put a stop to a new voting bill. We'll be right back.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.